podde tillbaks igen. Linus på baslinjen. Ja, han är tillbaka igen. Linus på baslinjen.
Welcome everybody to a brand new episode of Linus på baslinjen podcast together with the Spanish coach Pedro Rico today. Pedro has a lot of experience from coaching several interesting players during his coaching years. For example, we talk about when he worked with Carlos Boluda, a player that was considered to be the next Rafael Nadal. How was it to work with a player with that high expectations around him? We talk about the journey together with Roberto Bautista Agut, a player ranked inside top 100 that Pedro took to almost a top 20 position in the world. And of course, we talk a lot about when Pedro began working with Casper Ruud and being a part of that team that took them to the number one position in the world as a junior. Pedro tells us everything about building Casper's game and being a part of that team. And today, Pedro is coaching the talented Swedish junior Kevin Edengren. How much do Pedro try to copy how they work together with Casper now when he's coaching Kevin Edengren? And of course, we get into much, much more. It's a bit noisy in the background when we recorded this episode. I hope it doesn't disturb too much. And in the beginning, I think my voice is not at the sharpest because of the Wi-Fi, but it will become better very, very soon. So be patient, because this is a great chat and I think we all can learn a lot from Pedro Rico's experience. So please welcome Pedro. Let's go. All right, now sitting here with Pedro Rico. Welcome to the podcast, Pedro.
Thank you so much, Linus.
Pedro, I'm going to start with you as a player. You choose to play college tennis for Pepperdine, and I think it's always a discussion if it's a good way or not going to become a pro player. How was your college experience?
Well, my experience was amazing. You know, I have great memories from those years. I went to Pepperdine University, and we ended up my fourth and last year we ended up winning the NCAAs with the team. So that was an incredible experience. So all I can say is positive. The college career, I think, is a good option. You know, I can understand that depending on the player that you have, you might not see it as the proper thing to do, and maybe pick to go professional right away instead of wasting. You know, what they can say, waste your college years instead of going right away into pro level. But for me, from my point of view, I think it is a very good option, you know, because you can find many good, decent players that don't have the budget at first to give it a try at professional level, and maybe finding a good scholarship in college and maybe try some years there and then go into the pro level can be a good option as well. And also because I think the college option can give the player a more mature experience, or through college you can get more mature that can help you.
Yes.
But if there is a bad year that I want to mention, is that it will depend a lot on the program you pick.
Okay.
You know, yeah, US is full of colleges and many different options. So I think it is very important to pick well where you go.
Yeah.
But you know, we have clear examples of players that went through college, even the whole experience in college for 3-4 years, and then went into pro and had a great professional careers. You know,
yeah.
Right now we have Nori that went to TCU. We have McDonald's that went to UCLA. Steve Johnson, you know, former player for USC, did unbelievable in college, one of the best college players in the history. And then we have John Isner and other ones that maybe some people don't know, like Sam Def, the Indian guy, Sam Def Devermont.
Yes.
And also he played my years in college. The German guy, Benjamin Becker. Yeah.
Okay.
So all I can say is it's good things about college and
yeah.
But
yeah.
But you know, I can also understand that you have, let's say, a top junior player, and he's already doing the right things. Maybe. You wanna go right away to pro, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you need a good budget and a good program, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And for you, Pedro, how did you get into coaching from the start?
To coaching. Okay, so I went to college myself first. Then when I knew I didn't want to play pro, or I didn't want to try pro after. So after college, I played some prize money tournaments just to get some money and because I still had the level. But then right at the beginning, when I finished, I got a job at Ferrero's Academy.
Okay.
And I was in charge of the marketing side of the academy. I was selling the academy around the world, trying to bring players in. I was also doing some PR stuff with Juan Carlos Ferrero because he was still active.
Okay.
Then, so I traveled with him sometimes, organized his, you know, media things, but my main job was to sell the academy around. But then at the same time, I was doing some stuff on court. I helped with the juniors, with the top young players, and even with Ferrero, I did some sparring.
All right.
Yeah. So then I was mixing those two things, but I saw that I was good on court and I communicated well with the players, and I was getting some positive things from the players, and you know, I started liking it more and more until the day came that I was too busy on both sides, so I had to pick.
Okay.
Then I remember Carlos Boluda came to Ferrero's Academy and he tried some coaches. One of them was Samuel Lopez, is the coach of Carreño now. And the other one was me, so we were sharing Carlos' coaching job and the traveling together, Samuel and myself. And then Carlos asked the academy if I could do the full-time job. Then after some time, I decided to went into coaching, first with Boluda and then with some players at the academy. So that's how it started after college.
And that's quite interesting because, yes. I mean, Carlos Boluda was a very hyped player. I think he was considered to be sort of the new Rafael Nadal. How was that work for you? I mean, one of the first players you were coaching then?
Yeah, well, I I had a good backup from the academy. You know, I was young and I was motivated. He was a very good player, very smart on the court, and he knew what he was doing and he really wanted it. But I don't think that this comparison with Nadal made well on him. You know, that was a lot of pressure.
It must have been tough.
Yes, it was tough. You know, every place we went to, he got big crowds and everybody wanted to see him. And from young ages, he was doing very well in tournaments. But then, you know, things started getting a bit more complicated and tougher when he had the first step of pro, you know, playing futures and this type of tournaments. And then, you know, you get impatient and you are used to winning everything in young ages, and maybe you want things to come quick, and things don't go that quick, and then you start getting a bit irritated. You fears come, doubts, and then these things bring other things doubts on the team. You start checking other things, and then injuries came, and I think that was the big bad thing for him.
Continue.
Yeah, then he got after we work, I think from when he was 16 to 19.
Okay.
After 2 years at the academy, I decided to go to Alicante. I left the academy because, you know, I wanted to do some things on my own and grow in a different way. So I left the academy and Carlos left the academy with me. You know, I left, and then some time later, but quick.
Okay.
Carlos left the academy, and he came with me. So the last 2 years, he was me along with him at this at this other club in Arena.
Club.
You've been there. So I was working with him there for a couple of years, but when he was 18, he got injured his wrist. And then it was a quite bad injury, and it took some months for him to go back and start playing again. But he rushed a bit too much. I remember having some meetings with the parents, Carlos wanted to play too early, and then he started again and hurt him in his wrist again.
Okay.
And then that was bad again. So then he had to stay out for like, I think, 6-7 more months. So together it was like a year. And then when he started again, he had some he was very scared of getting hurt again, so he started switching things on his own. But then the relationship started getting worse and worse, and you know, too long together already, and after some time we decided to stop working together. I just didn't agree with him and the parents the way they wanted to do some things, and the rush was one of the things, actually.
Okay.
You know,
and
we decided to split, and I took my way, and they took a different way.
I wonder, Pedro, during these years with Carlos, when it was quite high expectations around him, what did you do as a coach to try to help him manage those expectations?
You mean on the court or like mental, or?
I'm thinking more mental, actually. I mean,
yes, it was a lot of mental. Linus. I remember those years with a lot of stress.
Okay.
Yes. With a lot of stress, he was very stressed. He wanted to show he could do it, and especially from this pressure that he had from the media and from his early years. So it was a lot of talking about, hey, you know, this is what you have done. This is the past, and here we are. This is now, and now is a different story, and we have to take it every day with what we have, and try to move on and get better with the things we have. And then, you know, the size waist, he was not too big. You know, he didn't grow too much, and that also he suffered from that as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I remember it was a lot of talking. I can, you know, I have a good relationship with him, and after we stopped working together, we still had many talks as friends. Okay. and he recognizes that it was also a bit of lack of self-esteem.
Okay.
You know, I remember him as asking many questions all the time. He needed confirmation of many things, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when you doubt that much, and then you need approval for many things, and then after years, after being coaching many players, after him, I can say that was probably one of his biggest weaknesses.
Okay. Pedro, another Spanish player you have been involving in coaching is Bautista Agut, which you helped raise his ranking inside the corporate. Can you tell us a bit about that journey and what you helped him to improve?
Yes, well, with Bautista, you know, he also came to Ferrero's Academy when he was younger, his junior years, and then his first tournaments at the pro level when he was playing futures. And every time he came to the academy, I was in charge of helping him and his coach, because he always came with his former coach, Jorge Reyes. So I was one of the main coaches from the academy trying to help him. So when he was a junior, I did some future events with him, and we had a great relationship, and we worked very well together. So then after I left the academy, and then I did my things in Alicante, and I was there doing my things, and then Bautista came. I think it was 2000. Yeah, my daughter was born 2013. Yeah, 2013. By the end of 2013, and he needed a coach, and then I studied that pre-season. So end of 2013, he needed a coach, and he thought about me. So I left the project I had at Arena, because I was working there with the group, with the coaching group. So I left that, and then I went with Bautista.
And how high ranking did he have then?
He was, when we started, he was 73, 76, something around there. And I remember the first tournament, I think second tournament in 2014, or the first one was Chennai. It was Chennai for sure, the tournament, but I don't know if it was the first one or the second one, if he had any tournament before. But he had to defend points, because he went to the final a year before against Verdic.
Okay.
He went there with another coach. So I remember it was kind of pressure. And then we went there and lost, I think, first round against a qualifier. So we didn't start quite well.
But that's a tough start.
Yeah, that was a tough start. And then we went to Auckland. And in Auckland, he played Daniel Jimeno, first round day, another Spaniard, and he was down a set and break in the second. And I remember, I was like, you know, that was my first experience. You know, I just started in the pro level, full-time coach, and I'm like, man, this is not a good start. But he managed to break back and ended up losing in quarterfinals against John Isner, playing well. He had break up in the third set to get to the semifinals, but we... You know, we had a great preseason. He was working well, playing well. But you know, in the pro level, it is one thing. It's results.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
about results. It is not about getting better in the process anymore. You need wins.
But sorry. Is it really like that? Is it just results, or do you as the coach talk about the process as well with the players, or no?
Yes, of course. You want to improve, and you try to improve always. And me as a coach, I am always trying to see how we can improve things. But with the pros, when it comes to improvement, it's little details that can make big differences. You know, like it does. You know, in the juniors, it's another type of improvement. You can work on many general things, and in the pro level, it's like a pro player is already built. You know. Technically and tactically, they know their strengths and their weaknesses already. So it's a different point of view when it comes to improvement. So in the pro level, now let's say now at the level I am with my player and playing the juniors, We don't talk about the wins or losses. We talk about improvement goals and getting level, getting better. You know, those are the goals that we have. But in the pro level, especially when you are in that ranking that Bautista was back then, 70, 80, you need the wins. You don't want to get out of the top 100. It's a huge difference in getting to top tournaments, and also in a huge difference in the prize money. So
would you say, Pedro, when you started full-time with Bautista, were you as a coach ready for a player at that level?
I think I proved myself, and I proved him, and or we proved each other as a team that it worked well. You know, he started 76, as I told you, defending some big points. And then after that result in Auckland, then we went to Australia, and he went to third round quite happy playing Del Potro. And he beat Del Potro in five sets. Then, you know, that was a click on him. After that result, things started rolling. More confidence. He had a couple of great wins, and that year he ended up almost top 20. It was when we finished. He was 24 in the world.
Okay.
So yes, it was a good. It was a good work.
Yeah.
If I was ready, that's a good question, Linus. Okay.
Or how do you know when you're ready?
I'm more. Exactly. You know, I love coaching. You know, and I'm always trying to look around and trying to get better, especially when I travel around and or talk to other coaches. So back then it was the same. How can we get better? How can we get better? In the preseason, we worked with some goals. You know, we had some clear goals of what I wanted to get a bit better. But then through the year, we and through the game and through the matches, you see things, and then you kind of see things that you have to improve if you want to get to the next level. You know, first is so top 50, then okay, you get the top 50. Okay, now what do I need? And then you keep taking steps forward. So I think we did that well. You know, so I was ready. I think I was ready because I wanted to get better every time. I'm more ready now. I can tell you that I'm more ready now.
What would you say that you? We will come to your other players you have coached as well. But what would you say that you have improved at the most today from when you worked with Bautista?
Okay. Well, I'm older. I'm more mature. I'm
more experienced.
Yes, more experience. It's like in real life. I can be more detailed with you. I can tell you that I know more things about technique that can help in a way or the other. I can tell you that through my years with Casper, I was so lucky and thankful. I worked with this guy from the Norwegian Federation, a video analysis expert that worked with
Serval.
Exactly, Oivind, and I learned many things, you know, and that I added that to my knowledge. So through the years and through the experience and through people, you learn things and you take what fits your way of coaching. So that's why I'm better and why I can tell you I'm better.
What would you say, Pedro, that the biggest lesson from that time with Bautista was that you learned?
Okay. One thing, maybe I can tell you a couple of things. The first thing I tell you that, you know, I really, I understood that it is harder to make it up to the top 100, you know, through the challengers. Everybody wants to be up there and make it and fight big time. It is much. It is harder that process than once you are there.
Okay.
You know, because there are many opportunities during the year and many players know it, and I don't think many players put the big fight and the motivation even at that high level that they put in one level behind, you know. I don't know if you understand what I mean. Winning or dying, you know, because they want to make it.
They want it so bad, yeah.
Yeah, and then if another thing, this improving things that you can always improve. You can always improve things.
Yeah.
No matter at what level you are. Yeah. No matter at what level you are. I remember doing this pre-season training. Sorry if I jump in the time, but I remember doing this pre-season training in Miami with Casper Ruud, and I remember watching Andy Murray. He ended up that year at number one, and he was working like crazy. And I remember Dimitrov as well, and you know, it's like I remember telling Casper, you know, we are working our. We are putting everything we can into this to get better, but look at that guy, he's number one and he's putting everything he has today
to that's so cool. Yeah.
Yes. So So no matter at what level, I think you can always keep improving.
And okay, Pedro, you have mentioned here that you work together with Casper Ruud. Can you tell us about that work and that journey? Because I think you were a part of the team when he became number one junior player in the world. Tell us, how does a journey like that look like?
Okay, so my story with Bautista was quite short at the pro level. You know, he thinks study going well, and through his manager, they were looking for a top coach. Okay. So after that year, we stopped, and then I went back to.
But you still took him from like 70 something to almost 20.
Why did I don't know. It was his decision, and he thought like that. And of course, there were other coaches that were open for the job, and big names. You know, as I told you, it was my first experience in the pro level as a full-time player. So there was other coaches around, like Javi Piles, that just finished his relationship with David Ferrer, and that's a big name. You know, I cannot compete with some names like
but
those.
Were you disappointed with that?
I was at first, but then you know, things happen for a reason, and then what I had after Bautista was one of the best experience I had in my life.
Okay.
And that experience with Bautista made me a better coach, and I was ready to take the challenge, and I showed again that, to especially myself, that I could do it, and that I was ready for it. So then after that year, I went back to Alicante, and I was about to start working with this group of Swedish young players that came to Spain looking for some Spanish experience and coaching, and I was going to sign a kind of contract with them to start working, but I... Back then, I'm a very good friend with one of Casper's manager, Benke Aure. And through those years, Benke was always telling me about this kid that trains in my club at Snaria in Oslo and trains with Christian Ruud. You know Christian? And I'm like, yeah, of course I know Christian Ruud, top 50 player. And yeah, man, they put the work, Pedro, and this kid is getting better. And some years before, I remember he told me, Pedro, he went to the final in the Europeans against Imer and against this Swedish guy that is doing well. And cool, great. And so it's an amazing story. So please, I'm going to make sure I tell you all the details, because it's a cool story from Benke.
Yeah, sure. So go ahead.
So Benke knew me, because Benke she has a house in Alicante, so she comes quite often to Alicante. So those years she used to come to Arena with the family, and I remember what she was telling me about Casper. So she saw me also the way I was coaching, and I was helping other players. I was helping young players. I was helping also pro players. And she knew I was working with Bautista. And also we met in Monte Carlo. I gave them tickets to get in there with her and the family. And so then she knew I was about to sign in with these Swedish players. And then she was like, hey, Pedro, before you sign anything, can I have a talk with you? And I remember I told my brother, I was like, you know, I know Benke has something to tell me, because I know her very well. So I'm like, I know she wants something, and whatever she's gonna offer is gonna be good. So and I was about to sign with these Swedish players, like in the next day or in
but
2 days.
Who was that?
It was one of them was Elias Enquist, and I think one of them was also Kevin, the player I'm coaching now. Yeah, they came to Spain. Kevin was very young.
Okay.
And the thing is that before I started full-time with Casper, I had Kevin and a group of three more Swedish players for 3 months in Spain, traveling and coaching them, and that was super fun. So okay. After that experience, I decided to go back to Spain and stay there and train there.
Okay.
So cool. So then she came, and she was like, "Hey, Pedro, this is what I did. You know, I approached to Christian Ruth. I told him I know people that can have the money for Casper to give it a try and do a good project, and I can get the money. But I also told him that if he wants that, he has to train with you. So that's part of the deal. And
okay.
And they want to have a test with you. I'm like, oh shit. Okay. then Christian and Casper came. I think the following week we had 3 days of training, and then they went on 1 week of training, and then he went to play this J3 somewhere, and I think he won the whole thing.
But Pedro, I must ask, when you have those,
it's a long story.
No, but when you have those 3 days with sort of a tryout, what do you do then as a coach on the court?
It was a week. Yeah, it was a week. First, I have a hit with him. I can tell you exactly how it was.
Yeah.
First, I have a hit with him. I see the way he hits, the way he plays. And then I do some basic drills that I like, you know, some like moving drills, some corner drills and things, and I see what I have. I see the potential. I see strokes, and from there you, or the way I see things, or they see the coaching, my coaching style. I see what can we do with what we have. So then the following days, I organize some training, some drills, clay court. So we got ready. We talk about some order on the court. We talk about dominating the court a bit more with the forehand, because back then he was still hitting too many backhands from too close to the middle of the court, and where you hit certain forehands in order to keep hitting the forehand on the next shots.
But do you talk with Casper about this, or do you talk with Christian about that?
Both.
Okay.
Both. And we did drills that is not only about talking, you know, also through drills you show him what you want to teach, or that's the way I like. So we both liked the experience, and then he went to that J3 and he won the whole thing, and then I got a call from Benke again, she wanted to talk again. So then they offered me a full-time job from January 2014. And that Christian said that yes to that project that Benke had. So she proposed some weeks, and I said less weeks.
Why?
Because I was still, like you said, if I was disappointed with Bautista's experience, and yes, in a way I was, because I think you know I saw it. I didn't agree with the way he did things. So I was a bit pissed with the tennis pro or that level, you know. So I was like, yeah, I do it. But instead of 25, I do 20 weeks or 20. And she was like, 22. And I'm like, okay, 20, 22, I do it. Let's go.
Okay.
And then we started. And what I can say about Casper and the family, it was unbelievable. It was a great experience. Things went well from day number one. We went to South America we, you know, we did a decent preseason, and then we went to South America instead of going to Australia. He was out of the top 100 ITF. We went to South America to play Copa de Café in Costa Rica, and then I think Venezuela and Ecuador. And then he was supposed to play another one, but he didn't need it because he won 3 J1s in a row, 15 matches.
Okay.
Winning. And yeah, and then we came back to Europe, top 20. It was 14 in the world.
Yeah.
And things started happening. You know, he got a lot of attention from sponsors in Norway, media, and he was like the hero, you know, the new Rude, and this, and things started happening. And then that year he finished number two. Fritsch was number one.
Yeah.
And then because Fritsch was 1 year older in January 2015, Kasper was number one in the world, followed by Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, during this time, Pedro, who was in charge? Was it you or was it Christian? Or how did you manage your roles?
Yeah, Christian has been always in charge. Christian was in, you know, studied the great work from from when Kasper was very young. I did the main traveling, and I can say that both Christian and I, we were in full contact every day to make and take decisions.
Okay.
You know, I did the main traveling. He was a lot in Spain. But I was always in touch with Christian. So to that question, I did the main traveling, and I spent a lot of time, more time than the Christian did those years. But we did it together, and he was the captain of the boat.
What important things would you say that you guys did during his junior time that might have helped him for his future success today as a senior player?
Okay, well, I had a clear idea, a clear goal of on the game. You know, we had a clear idea. We wanted to develop his serve. We obviously saw and knew that he had a huge forehand. So we work a lot on the weaknesses, but we also made his strengths even better.
Okay.
You know? That in terms of technique and tactic, his forehand got even better. He got many winners out of his forehand side. Also he needed to improve, to keep improving his technique on the serve to get it to what it is right now, you know, because it's a big weapon of his game.
Mm.
Also, his junior years, he was a good player on clay court, but he didn't, I think he was not a natural clay court player, like moving around the court. If I compare him with the Spanish players,
okay,
the top Spanish players on those years, you know, so we needed to improve the footwork and get better on defense. So we had some clear goals, and those things improved him a lot, made him improve.
Okay, because I'm thinking that a lot of times we as coaches, we talk about either the process or the result-oriented mindset. But I think with Kasper, you managed to both improve his game, but also make results during the way. Is that important, you think?
It is important, but the thing is that if you focus, or my experience tell me that if you focus on the process and level up, then results come, and then you keep taking steps forward. I remember with Kasper, it was like this, you know. We had a plan. We had a plan, and we needed to change it many times because he got so much better, but than what he did so much better than what we thought.
Okay.
You know. So and I remember we started working together, and we had some goals. We had top 100 ITF, top 50, and I told Christian, it's easy gonna be. He will be top 100 easy, Christian. And we started talking about other things. Let's focus about this, about his game and game plan. And 3 months later, he was top 20. And then we need to talk about more results. You know, once you have that big number, then you start talking. Of course, you want big things. And you're talking about French Open. And you're talking about winning a JAs, doing well in the Grand Slams, but we didn't start talking when he was out of the top 100. We didn't talk about, hey, let's go to French Open and let's do well there. No, once you start getting results and you get the level, and you see yourself up there, then you can start talking about these big things. But I don't think before you do that.
Okay. I'm thinking today, Pedro, when you work with another junior player, Kevin Edengren, have you sort of tried to copy the work you did with Kasper with Kevin now, or how? I mean, is it sort of a similar setup today?
It is a similar setup. Yeah, it is. We have at the same base, and I work only with him, and I move him around with different players, and yes, I use many same drills I use with Kasper. Many, but you know, that's the way I coach, or that's the way I think junior players, for me, they need to have a base, and it depends on how you are as a coach. Maybe base could be a different thing, one thing or another. But for me, you know, having that base is important.
Okay.
And with
base, you mean like a consistent game from the baseline, or what do you mean with the base?
Yes, I mean understanding what you do on the court, and some things that should be done, and some others that should not be done, you know, according to where you are on the court, your position on the court, height from the net, order on directions, things like this, that base will make you a better player, especially at those years.
Okay. And then
from there you can develop other things, depending on the player that you have. You know, you like big weapons. Of course, I see Kasper, and I have Kevin, and I work many things the same, but some others I don't. Kasper didn't have Kevin's backhand. Kevin doesn't have what Kasper's forehand back then. You know, every time Kasper had the chance to go around, he went around. With Kevin, I made him stay more with the backhand, switch direction much more often with the backhand than I did with Kasper.
Yeah.
You know, these are some details, but we can talk a lot about this.
well. Yeah, it's super interesting. It's super interesting. For Kevin, that is moving up in the rankings among the juniors now, and hopefully will play a slam very soon. How important do you think your experience as a coach from these higher tournaments is now when Kevin is approaching that same level?
Well, I think it is very important. Yeah. First, because I think he, from the very beginning, he respects me a lot. Mm. So when you tell him things, he really listens. Mm. And also from what I told you before, you know, my experience throughout these years, I know I'm better. I show it on the court. I show it with my drills, with my messages to him, and I think he feels that as well.
Yeah.
He feels he's improving.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same with his parents. You know, I was very lucky with Kasper. He has an amazing family around that was always patient.
Yeah.
Of course, things came very quick.
Yeah.
But if we had our rough times as well, and I felt never pressure. They were always great, and it's the same with Kevin. You know, they trust the process. They trust my work because especially they see the work we put. Mm. And also they see that Kasper back then or Kevin now, Kasper was improving and Kevin now is improving, mm. You know, many different ways. And I think, I really believe I put the work,
okay.
You know, I put my heart into this. I really love what I do.
I wonder, Pedro, obviously with Kasper, who had his father as one of the coaches, of course you did a lot of communication with Christian. But I'm thinking, like, even with for example, Kevin's father is also very interested in the tennis, but he's not coaching. How much do you communicate with Magnus, Kevin's father, today about his tennis?
About his tennis? Often.
Mm.
Often. I cannot tell you. I mean, I have a daily communication with him. It's not that we talk about Kevin's tennis every day. We don't. But we have meetings together every month, or together with Magnus and Linda, Kevin's parents, and talk about everything. About calendar, we talk about Kevin. And at the end, mm. we all want Kevin to get better. But yeah, exactly. I have a great communication with them and both ways, you know, they also with me. If I have to say, or if I feel something is not the way I want or I like, I tell them, and the same way around, the same way mm. from their side. And
mm.
so and at the end of the day, the main goal and what we all want is Kevin to get better.
Okay.
So I'm very lucky, you know, they are very involved in Kevin's career, but they are not obsessed. And
yeah.
they respect what I do. I respect them, and we are a great team.
Yeah. When you work full time for a player, Pedro, even if it's a junior and it's a lot about the process and developing your game, can you feel pressure during times when the results has not been super good for a couple of weeks or months, for example?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do. And that's something I have improved and got better throughout the years, you know. you know, back then or some years ago, you get a loss and it's the end of the world, and then you get a win and then you see hope, and then you know your days go like this. I don't know if, I'm quite sure you understand what I mean.
I can see myself yourself.
Yeah, exactly. but I think we have to put we have to trust this it's not only talking about this process thing, and we have to trust time and the process and understand that the losses are a big part of the game, especially if you learn from them.
It is
So yes, of course I feel the pressure, but you recognize it, and you I think you will continuously feel that, and it's part of this thing. If you don't feel it, then it's not natural. You feel it, you recognize it, and you let it be, and then you feel you see that energy, or you feel that energy changing when the player, you see the player getting the confidence, getting some wins, getting better matches with better players, and so you have to recognize both. And I don't think it is good to get depressed when you lose, but no. I don't think it is also good when you get super excited when they win and you think everything is already done, you know.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
And we didn't mention that, Pedro, but how long time did you work together with Casper?
A bit over 3.5 years, from 16 to 18 and a half, a bit more, okay. Something like this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, a great experience. Number one ITF, and then also first ATP point, 208 is best with me.
Okay, cool. The step between the juniors and seniors is also quite interesting, a tough step for many people. How did you prepare Casper for that step to go from juniors to seniors?
Well, how do we prepare? Okay, so what we did the first year, we played mainly juniors, and then the following year you start adding. We started adding more professional tournaments into the calendar, mixing them up with the juniors.
Yeah.
So. Then he started playing better matches and getting better. And like I told you before, according to where you are and the matches you're playing, you see things that you need to improve. So, you know, he's getting better matches against better players. And then you see what you need to improve in order to get farther in those tournaments that you're playing now. But the thing with Casper is that Even now, I think his skill of adapting to every new level is amazing.
Mm.
You know, he gets to top 100, and then he in few months he gets better, top 50, then in few, and then everybody's talking about Casper, top 50, wow! But a few months later, he adapted already, and he's top 30. Oh, wow, top 30, wow! who would have said that some years ago? But then a few months later, he's top 20. Oh shit, you know? And now, and I remember, I was in February, I was in Oslo, and I had a chance to see. Some of the of his coaching team and his family and we were talking let's see now what happened, how he copies with this, you know, with this pressure, top 10, this blah blah blah, and now today he's number 5.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So, and back then it was the same, exactly the same on big situations, and that was one of his strengths. His overcoming to big situations and biggest scenarios.
Yeah,
you know, he didn't have the best technique, the cleaner shots on the juniors and compared to others, but he was a huge competitor and he knew how to find the way in order to get better. So so going back to your question, if I can say something or the way I see it is that according to the level you are, I keep trying to find how you can get better in order to compete better at that level.
Okay.
And keep taking steps forward.
I would like to ask Pedro, you're from Spain and you have your base in Alicante. You have worked with a Norwegian player and now with a Swedish player. We in Sweden, we have a picture of Spanish tennis or tennis lessons as a lot of feeding, long drills, long rallies, a lot of grit. Is that the way you're coaching as well and the way you're structuring your lessons, or how would you describe yourself as a coach?
I do that a lot. I do that a lot, but not mainly that. not mainly that. How I describe myself as a coach? Well, I think I'm quite demanding.
Mm.
I'm quite demanding and tough on the court, especially when it comes to give your best and your best in terms of effort and especially attitude and intention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite serious with the technique.
Okay.
I believe I'm quite sure I'm quite serious with the technique, not obsessed, but I'm quite serious with that. I believe or I understand that better technique normally develops better overall game for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of order, like I mentioned before. You know, it's in young ages, the most important thing in matches is if you want results, is who misses less, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And then in the future, then it comes who hits more winners, or it's a different story. But those years is. It's about missing less, and I think a basic order or a decent order brings confidence and wins.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Especially at those ages, and yeah, I use a lot of those type of drills that he did. And a structured type of drills.
Okay.
But then it depends on what state you are, Linus. You know, this question is a bit tricky.
I think you're doing well.
I still use it with Kevin a lot. Now, but I now, if I compare to what I did with him some years ago, I let him decide more than I did some time ago, because back then I needed to get something first.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, defense. We cannot play flat back and down the line defense. I mean, you can play and maybe try to make 2 out of 10 or try to play these highlight shots that these junior players see on TV many times, but I think they should see more of other type of players. You know, many top players play without many winners, and I'm talking about top 20 players. And that's another thing that we can talk for a lot time, a long time.
we can do more episodes, Pedro, don't worry.
I'm a coach that like a lot of hitting, and I like see clean shots, that first, and then moving them, hitting, keeping that flowness or that flow still moving, and then, you know, then different steps forward.
I see. Last question about your current work with Kevin, but he's one of the top juniors in Sweden in his age, even if he obviously have his base in Spain and Alicante. Are you having a lot of contact with the federation coaches from Sweden about Kevin and about his development?
Not really. I actually would like to maybe have more.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. I don't.
Okay. But
yeah, I don't.
Okay.
Let me say, Linus, that Kevin has been selected to play the Europeans, the Junior Europeans. I got a nice call from the federation last week.
Okay.
And he's been selected together with Sebastian Eriksson to represent Sweden in the Europeans. So big congratulations for Kevin going to the Europeans as his first junior year.
Oh, that's great. And also congrats to you for a great work.
Thank you. Thank you, Linus.
We will finish this podcast, Pedro, with some questions I ask to all my guests here. Are you ready for that?
I think I am.
How have you changed your way of coaching the last couple of years?
How do I change? I'm more patient than what I used to be. I think I took things more personal when I was younger, and I don't do it that much anymore. I just put everything in as part of the process, and that includes the good and the bad, and the wrong days, losses, wins, great days. I don't know. I put everything there, and before, maybe I took some things more personal and hurt me a bit more, and also hurt relationship with the players as
okay.
well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a bit colder. You can call it like that.
Yeah. Okay. But would you say that? I mean, you did this amazing run with Kasper through the juniors, and you have also worked with Bautista Agut, that it was top 100. Are you still as hungry today as before to do this again?
I have my days. I have my days like everybody does. I have my down days, but I really love my everyday basis, and I love what I do, and I love when things go well. You like it even more, but I think I'm going back to the first question, Linus. I think I'm more aware of things now than what I was before, you know, on court and off court.
Okay.
And that helps, that's helped me as a coach in all the aspects, and with the player, I believe so as well.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm I'm still motivated. I'm with, I'm still with energy, and I love watching Kevin getting better, and I get pumped up in trainings.
Yeah.
My, you know, time goes fast because I'm loving my time on the court. But you know that that comes also from Kevin's side. You know, he's a kid that puts all the effort into this, and he makes it easier for me.
Of course.
So that yeah, that helps. You know what I'm talking about. You know, if you you're spending the time on the court with someone that doesn't really want it, then it's a waste of time. But it's with Kevin, I'm just loving the everyday basis.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Next question: a movie or book you have been inspired by?
Books or book?
Okay. You can say two if you like.
Okay, I'm gonna say Invictus.
Okay.
By John Carlin, I believe, from the movie. You know, Invictus, the movie from the with Morgan Freeman, and.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the another book. It's The Power of Now. Probably doesn't have many things to do with sport, but a lot to do with life, and you can maybe apply it to many aspects of the life. And
Okay.
Coaching. Power of Now, of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
All right. Cool. And Invictus with Morgan Freeman and Matt Damon, right?
Yes.
Cool.
It's the story about Mandela and
all right,
getting the country together, unifying the country, you know, after being in prison for like over 30 years and comes out of the prison without hate and getting the country together and using the rugby team in order to get blacks and whites.
Okay.
In the same, unify the country. So that's a good movie. You should watch.
I will for sure.
But Linus, the book is much better.
As always, but it's easier to see the movie. But I understand. Two more questions. What do you do in 10 years, Pedro?
In 10 years, what do I do? Oof.
Yeah, it's a tough question. But are you still working with Kevin?
I hope so. That would mean a lot. That would mean that we are where we want to be.
Exactly.
So yes, I see myself with Kevin, and loving my everyday.
Yeah.
Because that makes life easier. So yes.
Yeah. For sure.
Further.
And finally, Pedro. Like I ask everyone, would you like to recommend anything?
Okay. I will recommend to be patient with the process. To parents, to coaches, and to players. It's easy to say it, and maybe easier for me to say it after working with more than only one player.
Yeah.
But if you put the work and you trust the work and you do the right things, you get better. You get better. There's no other way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then the other things come into play: skills, strengths, and but the process, doing the right things. The process brings improvement. And also another thing, just if you into the coaching, maybe this I would say more to the coaching people.
Yeah.
Just to do it because you really like it, you know, not only because of money. If you do it only because of money, at the end, you end up hating it or not liking it or doing something else.
Exactly. Last thing, Pedro. During setbacks, during times when it's been tough for the players with maybe some losses or bad confidence, how do you do as a coach to push the player forward when maybe the player has tough times with motivation, if you understand what I mean? Because I guess we all go through it sometimes. How do you do then to motivate your players when it's tough?
Linus, that for me, or from my experience, tells me that depends a lot on the player you have. You know, some things I work more with some players, and some things I work better with others. You know, like for example, with Kevin. Okay, let's compare two players that I have had. With Boluda, it was a lot of going back into the court and train. But with Kevin, can be a bit different, you know. It can be sometimes letting him be on his own and having his time, and then go back into the court stronger has worked even better than push right away and making work, you know. So it depends, and that and this the coach has to know the player well, and he has to understand what things work and what things don't work. You know, and it's the coach that has to adapt to the player. So
yeah, I see.
So
it's individual.
Yeah, it's very individual. But with Casper, I think he has to do a lot also with talking to the player and asking. Maybe at certain points they feel like having some days off and going back to court and train hard. Maybe sometimes it's even trying different things like different tension strings and something new sometimes, or many times help, you know. Bringing new drills. So I'm sorry that I'm very wide open with this one, but
that's how it is.
I don't have anything specific.
No, I see. I understand.
Yeah, you have to be creative as a coach, you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Pedro, it's been super nice talking to you. I'm sure we could do at least another hour with even more details, but maybe that's for another episode.
Let's do it for sure.
Big good luck in later this year, Pedro, both for you and Kevin. And thank you so much for sharing your experience here today.
Thank you so much, Linus. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was a great chat with Pedro. And like I mentioned, I'm pretty sure we could talk even more about specific things, and I hope that can happen in a new episode shortly together with Pedro. Super interesting to listen to a coach that have experience from working with several players at a quite high level, and currently together with Kevin. And I have seen Kevin work together with Pedro back in Alicante, and I really wish them all the best of luck. They're doing a great job over there. And I also found it quite interesting, or not interesting, but we all know that, but it's always fun to hear when someone has seen with their own eyes how hard the top players work. Where, like Pedro mentioned with Andy Murray in Miami, and Dimitrov while he was there with Casper, and said like, well, we do a great job here, but look at these guys, they're already at the top and they work their ass off every day day in, day out. That's well, there's no easy way out if you want to become one of the top players out there, because if you don't do the work, there's others doing it. That's how it is. Well, guys, thanks for listening to this episode, and well, I hope to talk to you soon again in a new episode. So don't forget to push the subscribe button so that you don't miss out of a new episode when it's coming out. Thanks for today.